yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, in recent weeks, we've been talking a lot about the global economy, and we will come back to that in subsequent weeks, but this show is called Alternative Visions. In other words, just not another vision of what's going on in the global economy or the U.S. economy, but Alternative Visions about solutions to these problems. And today, that's what our show is going to refocus on. We're going to go back down to the grassroots where we typically, periodically interview folks who are involved in the real struggle. You know, you can talk about the problems till you're blue in the face, and it doesn't matter. All you intellectuals out there, you can write all your articles, you can give all your speeches and all the great ideas and so forth, and nothing matters until folks actually do something about it. Folks who are right down there in the ground level, where the rubber meets the road, where the real issues take real focus. Okay, and today we're going to do just that. We're going to go back to the grassroots, as we do periodically, talking to people in the labor movement, in the union movement, in the Hispanic rights movement, immigrant workers movement, etc. We do that periodically, and we're going to do that today, and the issue is rent gouging. Boy, we've seen a lot of gouging going on lately, haven't we? The pharmaceutical companies are killing people by raising the price of their drugs thousands of percents. We talked about that, too. And we got gouging going on everywhere, mostly folks who can't afford it. And rents. Rents are one of the worst conditions in the U.S. today. Price gouging on rents going on everywhere. You know, they're gouging the students with increases in tuition and so forth, and it's everywhere. But rents is probably the worst place, and of course it affects mostly people who are not getting wage increases for a decade now. If you look at average wages and median family income, you know, family of four, median income, real income adjusted for inflation, it's less today than it was in 2000. Yes, every year between 1 and 2% or 1%, 0%, somewhere around there, wages are dropping. Income is dropping. People aren't getting raises anymore, and they're losing hours of work as we shift to, you know, a part-time temp contractor gig economy bullshit, right? And they're not getting raises, but the rents are going up. Oh, yeah, rents are going up and taking a bigger and bigger slice. Okay, just to give you some idea, and we're talking here from the Bay Area, and Bay Area rent gouging is one of the worst in the country. Let's take the Silicon Valley, South Bay, San Jose area. You know, rents went up last year 8.3%, and the year before 18.5%. That's like 27% in just 2 years. How many people got 26% wage increases in the Valley? Oh, well, maybe if you work for Apple as a manager, you might have, right? Or some software engineer working for some startup, yeah. But, you know, real people live there, too. Not just, you know, the top 2% of the labor force in the United States. You know what it costs, average rent now in the San Jose Silicon area for, you know, a normal apartment, two-bedroom apartment? $3,443 a month. $3,443 a month, and it keeps going up. Okay. San Jose area, Silicon area, is the third most expensive place to rent in the United States. The only places that are more expensive are Honolulu and New York City. And, you know, if you look at the rest of the Bay Area, they're right up there in the top 10 as well. San Francisco's sixth most expensive, right? And Vallejo and Santa Rosa and all the other places around the Bay Area in the top 10. Even Santa Cruz, Watsonville, fifth most expensive place to live in the country. Okay, so we're going to talk to some folks today who are trying to resist this, organizing at the grassroots level. I have two excellent guests here. I have Maria Marroquin, who is the director of the Mountain View, which is a city down there in Silicon Valley, Mountain View Worker Day Center, and sees these problems every day of people being driven out of their homes and their apartments because the landlords are just jacking up the prices, 26% in 2 years. And I also, we're also going to welcome Gail McLaughlin, who's city council person in Richmond, where the same struggle has been going on. It's going on all over the Bay Area. What we got to do is get all these folks linked up and make it a general effort and then march on Sacramento with people from all over the cities in the Bay Area and demand that they do something about this. Gail McLaughlin is also going to tell us about rent control measures that have been fighting for up there in Richmond. Okay. Maria, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Jack. How are you doing?
Okay, Maria. Gail, are you on?
Yes, I am. Great to be here.
Okay, Gail. All right, so I'm just going to let you two tell people what's going on in your respective areas. What are the problems that you're facing? Tell us about the desperation of folks and how they're beginning to organize. And, you know, feel free to tell people where they can go to find more information to join your efforts. When the next action comes up, where they should be. Because, you know, folks are going to have to get off their butt and do things. You know, you just can't keep writing and talking about stuff. All right, you've heard me on this show talk about that point time and time again. But let's just hear from the real folks, down there in the real world here. Maria, tell us what's happened. What is the Worker Day Center? Where can people go to find information in the course of what you're going to say? But what is the Worker Day Center? How did it start? What are the issues? And what are the problems that you see? What's going to happen? I'm going to just let you talk and tell your story here and not interrupt. When you get it all out, then we'll chat a little bit. And then we'll turn and let Gail tell the story of what's going on in Richmond. Okay, the floor is yours, as they say in unions. Speak.
Thank you, Jack, again. Well, the Day Worker Center is a place when we connect day laborers with employers. So this is the basic thing that we do. And we are a nonprofit organization, and besides, we provide a lot of services for the workers, training, English classes, all kinds of support and referrals. And the day laborers are people who are looking for jobs, temporary jobs. And as you can imagine, they are very vulnerable, and they are really suffering all this crisis about housing. So unfortunately, because very often that I see people are really stressful, really with apathy, a lot of depression, because definitely they are not able to succeed. I have been through the years, and just as you said, the last 2 years has been very dramatic. You're seeing people living in their cars, people moving very far away from the Silicon Valley, places as Tracy, for example, like a 2 hours commute one way, so back and forth, just to be able to come and serve to this community. So that is something like this. I can say very bluntly, this is displacement, because the people who work need to be moving out, and still their services are really needed, so they need to come and serve here. So, and I just also want to mention one quote from one of our teachers that spoke in one of the city council meetings, who said, "Who would want to work here? The rents make you poor." And that is just following your ideas. So that is happening. So the rents have been destroying the economy, the local economy, because all the increases that people need to pay in the rents, they don't spend this money just in the local economy. So the restaurant, they don't have enough time to go to so good movies. So you can imagine. So, and it's really damaging the community, just economically. And even if we talk emotionally, as a community per se, has been worse, because now the people, as I've mentioned, they need to move far away, and they are very stressful. So they really have no interest, is beyond their own themselves, because definitely they are not able to perform at the best capacity, because they really are tired and unfortunately many times even ill. So I have been just seeing this for many, many years, but mostly more strongly just lately. It's why we start working as a community with organizations, with tenants mostly, in the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area. And we come with the idea to make a coalition. And our organization is Mountain View Tenants Coalition. And we work with faith-based organizations, community leaders, and also non-profit organization who has been just doing this grassroots movement. And we organize rallies and meetings, and we are working towards to resolve this situation. And I believe we have been some successful, if I can say, because we get attention from our representatives, from the media, and the movement is growing. So I have the privilege to be also working with Gail, also in other areas, to San Jose too, and just make these collaborative efforts with our friends in San Mateo, just to make this kind of movement, and instead to just isolate thing. So we understand we need to have rent stabilization, definitely, as soon as possible. But also, that measure needs to include just cost for eviction. That is very important. And I can explain how difficult it is for people just to survive when the landlord decides just to increase the rent, like as you said, 20%, 30% is no regulations to avoid that. And then still, if you don't pay, still they just need to tell you, okay, well, you are not welcome here anymore, and is no any protection for the tenants. And as everybody knows, all the industry has regulation. Well, unbelievable, this housing has no regulation. So people who are tenants has just no rights to do anything. So even the landlord, if you don't pay the rent, they have the right to evict you. They have legal right to do it, but the tenant has not. So it's why we are working in this, and we are hopeful like we can continue achieving more changes for our community that really, really need it. We also, besides the rent stabilization, we also visualize more high density. We're trying to influence that, like we need to have more high density housing, of course more housing, and also subsidized housing. So we're trying to visualize this solution or work towards this solution holistically, definitely. So I want to stop there in case for open this for a conversation, and there's the opportunity.
You mentioned allies here. Who are your movement's allies down there? You mentioned the faith-based. Obviously, the churches are involved. What kind of coalition have you been able so far to put together down there?
We have organizations like law clinics, for example, like locally siding community leaders, people who work with the grassroots, and mostly some tenants, so people who really are organizing and very impressive, so the work that they have been doing.
Do you have any student organizations? You know, students always have a tough time affording to pay for houses, it would seem, apartments, it would seem that, you know, if you could get some kind of movement going on in the campuses down there, there might be another source of allies. And, of course, the churches are a very important source of allies in that regard. Any student organizations that are... We have a close
Stanford University, and this group of students are working just helping us, just like providing some study. So how this situation is really detrimental for the health of the tenants. So mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely, students are also very precious in our movement.
Mm-hmm. How about some of the unions down there, like the Service Employees Union and so forth? Have they been, they're very much socially active, some of the SEIU public employee unions are. Have you been able to bring them into your coalition?
Well, they are very supportive, so definitely we need see more presence from them. But we are getting ready for the next step, and I'm pretty confident that we are going to have them on board, definitely. The conversation has been really smaller scale, but we are ready to jump in, definitely. We are working in different parts. So we already achieved with the City Council one ordinance that allows or obligates the landlord offer a contract, like agreement, from 6 months or 1 year. And that is one a little bit kind of a victory, we can say. And then now on the 15th of March is going to be introduced what potential ordinance about the conciliation, mediation, and binding arbitration that could be a little bit helpful also for the tenants. So we have been little by little just pushing hard, but we are ready for the next big step that I want to share with you later on.
Yes, well, you know, due process is pretty important when it comes to rights. And it sounds like until recently there has been no due process and therefore no rights. The power is all on the side of the property owners, and they dictate and say, pay 20% or get out. That's the way it's been up to now, and it's great that you've been able to have even a small victory here with ordinances. Do you know what else? There's a lot of cities down there in Silicon Valley. You're, as I understand, focusing on Mountain View, but are there similar efforts being organized in other cities down there in Silicon Valley that you know of?
Yeah, definitely.
What other cities have, are there worker day centers in the other cities, or is yours pretty much for the valley?
No, we have different day worker centers. San Jose has one, San Mateo has other one, San Francisco, Hayward, Santa Cruz. So in all of them, most one of the other ones are active in the community struggle, definitely. So we provide this kind of support from people who really need some
help. Are the other worker day centers doing the same effort that you are in terms of trying to achieve ordinances and so forth?
Not at this moment. So different centers are focusing different situation that is kind of more impactful in the moment. But definitely, so we count with the support of the National Day Labor Organized Network and any effort that we start, so they will be very supportive. But this coalition is beyond the day labor community. So as I said, it's community leaders, is religious organization too, that is very grassroots based, but is very local, I can say. But we are coordinating efforts also with our friends in San Mateo, for example. They are ready for the ballot initiative, and working also very close with our friends in Richmond. So besides to be our guidance and our heroes, so we are working also, and that we have been getting support from them too. In San Jose, of course, so we also work with them and just follow the steps and how they are organizing the community. So here in Mountain View, we are 50% of the residents, we are tenants, so we have a lot of people.
60%. Wow, that's a big
percentage. Almost 60, yeah. 68%, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That is very highly, yeah. Yeah.
How about in the folks in San Francisco? I know there's a big issue over there. They're being squeezed by accelerating rent prices, too, particularly, you know, a lot of the techies who work down in your area, the young ones, prefer to live in San Francisco, and they're driving up the prices in San Francisco, as well as, by the way, foreign money, cash money coming into San Francisco and the Bay Area. I've talked a lot about the crisis in Asia and China and so forth, and collapsing stock market there, and what wealthy Chinese are doing is cashing out their stocks, now that the stock market is falling, converting it to dollars and sending it into property and real estate here on the West Coast. And a lot of cash buying of homes now occurring, and apartment complexes and so forth, from this foreign money flowing in. And that will continue and intensify. Any talk with folks similar organizing going on in San Francisco itself?
Well, yeah, it's kind of similar, the same that Oakland. So we have kind of the same philosophy, just involve the people really and hear, listen from the people what they want to do it. I'm aware like people is organizing around the mission, for example, the mission zone or area, because definitely they want to see how community really visualize or what they want in the community. You guys, really important point here, because something that we are really working towards is involve people in the decision that is going to be impacting their lives. So it's not like we need just followers. So we really want people to speak up. And it's what is happening in Oakland and in San Francisco, and we are doing it here also in Mountain View. So people is mobilizing.
Okay, so people are efforts going on in different places throughout the Bay Area, and you're in contact with each other, but you're not at a point yet where you are proposing and developing joint actions, all the different areas together. Not yet, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I've talked many times on this show about one of the problems in American progressive politics is that people are isolated. A lot of isolated individual actions here and there, protests below the radar. People don't see it. A lot of activity going on, but things are done fragmented, and there's not a enough unification of these efforts. It's when you centralize and unify these efforts that you really get a voice, particularly. In places like Sacramento, you know, which are kind of important for your efforts, you can go before city councils and make some gains there, and that's all important. But to really get visibility, you got to get up there to Sacramento, and that's where unifying all these different efforts and speaking with one voice probably is an important next step in the whole effort, I would say.
Indeed will be, yeah, definitely. But as you can imagine, they are very different, a lot of battles that we need to fight. And each community has their own hell and their own. So just we have emergency every single time. We have the rates in some places. We have the homeless situation. We have the gun situation. We have the privacy. It's endless, the list of urgency that every community is focused on. immigration is one big one, but mm-hmm. still, so it's hard. It's hard just to unify in one effort because it's no resources enough for all of us.
Yes, I'm not making a point that the local struggles and piecemeal struggles should not be done. Obviously, you have to do something at the local level to get support, and things can be achieved there. But, you know, everyone's going to continue spinning their wheels as long as they just keep fighting on a fragmented level and not unifying. At some point, unification of these struggles and efforts has to occur, and some sort of a cross-organizational body or structure has to be developed if you're going to take it to the next level, because, you know, divide and conquer, the very forces of influence and power in this country are very good at dividing and conquering and keeping everybody fighting individually and locally and not really coming together in a broader movement. They're very good at that, and as long as we continue these local struggles on a local level only, yes, they have to occur on a local level, that we're going to be at a big disadvantage politically in the long run.
Yes. No, definitely. So I believe the key somehow word
somebody
is
needs
only,
to,
right? Now, so mm-hmm. we are going to have the opportunity to hear from Gail, but this is kind of a movement, as I said. So,
Okay. Where can people go to find out more about what's being done there in Mountain View and in the South Bay? You have a website or a source?
Yeah,
it
will be Facebook page, and I really encourage people just to go there. It's Mountain View Tenants Coalition. This is our Facebook page.
Mountain View Tenants Coalition, all one word?
Coalition. Mountain View Tenants Coalition.
.org.
Facebook.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And do you have some kind of an activity or a protest or city council meeting coming up that folks might want to?
Yeah, next Wednesday we are going to continue our training for our community for the tenants. It's going to be in the community center at Rengstor Park at 6 p.m. And then on the 16th of March is going to be a hearing about this rental dispute mediation ordinance, mm-hmm. and that is going to be a discussed. And voted on it and see we are going to learn what could be the trigger for the rent increases that trigger to this rental mediation ordinance. So,
okay, that's at the city council? Is that going to be
the city council
meeting?
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm not sure what time is going to be in the agenda, but the city council starts at 6:30. So people who are listening now, your audience, more than welcome to come and write an email to the council people just to be part of this conversation.
Okay, so that's the 16th of March.
No, 15th. 15th. Tuesday 15th, yeah.
15th of March, okay. City Council meeting where an important new ordinance giving some rights to renters is going to be on the agenda. And if people want to, they can come to the City Council, Mountain View City Council meeting. Do you have an address for this where the City Council meets?
500 Castro Street. 500 Castro Street. And I just want to add, this proposal doesn't include just cause for eviction. That means is, I don't want to sound rude, but it's a little bit useless. Because without any proposal, without this protection for the tenants, is not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They can go to your website, Mountain View Tenants Organization, to find out more about this activity coming up and other actions that they can get involved with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and clarify, is a Mountain View Tenants Coalition at Facebook.
Facebook, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned there was something else occurring before the March 15th meeting. What was that?
The training, community training, is from the community. So as I said, we really honor and value the community participation, and we are going to speak about what is going to happen or what we should expect from this proposal on the 15th, and what is the next step that we are that the people wants to do in order to resolve the rent stabilization crisis. And it's going to be on the 24th. So is this the following Wednesday, that is no is the 2nd of March, I'm sorry, 2nd, March 2nd at
March
6 p.m.
6 p.m., and where is that located?
In the Rengstorf Park Community Center.
Rengstorf Park Community Center, okay.
Community Center, 6 p.m., okay. March 2nd.
March 2nd, okay. And then that's
Wednesday.
Sort of like a preparatory meeting before the March 15th City Council meeting. Okay.
That's true. Yes,
all right. Now,
true.
Is there also a phone number if people want to call your Worker Day Center to find out more that we can tell folks?
Yeah. We can use the Day Worker Center, 650-903-4102.
Okay. 650-903-4102. If you want to call.
Of 650-520-9097.
Okay. And what was this last one, 520? Is that another number at the day center?
650-520-9097.
Okay, very good. We got it all down. Okay, Maria, we hope your meeting's on March 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Rengstorf Community Center, where folks are going to be getting together to prepare for this March 15th City Council meeting to try to push through some ordinances here to give some protection for renters in your area. And we hope to hear more about what your activities are down there. And personally, I hope to hear more about groups getting together and not only confronting their city council, but confronting the politicians at higher up levels. Anyway, okay.
You will.
Okay, we will. We will. And do keep us informed here, and we'll help keep the people informed. Gail Laughlin. I'd like to introduce Gail McLaughlin here from a city council person in Richmond.
Yes, thank you so much, Jack, for having me on the show, and it was great to hear Maria speak just before. I have had been able to speak with her on a number of occasions because we do share many problems, including and especially this housing crisis that, you know, so many of us are dealing with. I just wanted to start out by saying that, you know, in Richmond, we're a city, you know, across from San Francisco Bay, north of Berkeley, and we have a very diverse community. We have right now about almost 40% Latinos and about 26-27% African American and you know, about 6% Asian American and you know, and some Native American and others in our community. So it's a majority people of color community. Very diverse gives us our strength. We also have a history of social, environmental, and economic injustices. And what we did in Richmond to respond to these injustices a little over a decade ago was to form the Richmond Progressive Alliance. And this is an organization that we think is a model for other local and local municipalities. And we think that, and so we are sharing the message of what we've done, what we are doing as an RPA, Richmond Progressive Alliance. We call ourselves the RPA, because we agree with you that, you know, more and more cities have to get together and form these progressive models so that we'll have strength when cities have progressive elected officials and progressive movements in our municipalities, then we can join together and be quite a force, I think, on Sacramento. So, you know, I think your point is well taken. So one of the things that we have done in the RPA, in addition to building a local movement, is run candidates, progressive candidates for local office. And these candidates take no corporate money. And I was honored to be an RPA candidate. I am four times now, won all my campaigns, served two terms as mayor. That's 8 years until I termed out. And then I decided to run for city council and was elected in 2014 and am now serving on the city council. I'm very honored to be an elected official who's addressing some of these really, really profound problems. And we've made some great, great success, especially in defeating the money of the major oil refinery in our backyard, the Chevron Richmond Oil Refinery. They spent over $3 million to try and defeat me and two other RPA candidates in 2014. All three of us, myself, Jovanka Beckles, and Eduardo Martinez, won our races in 2014, and so we all serve on the city council right now. So that strength has allowed us to address this housing crisis, among other problems. But speaking to the housing crisis, Richmond has, like Mountain View, like so many other cities throughout the nation, has experienced just these skyrocketing rents. For example, rents went up generally in Richmond from $1,500, which is too high to begin with, to $1,900, or 26% in the last 4 years. And they keep going up, and people are getting displaced. San Francisco, Oakland has experienced great gentrification. We're on the cusp of that. We're just starting to experience this, and we want to stop it before it gets too, you know, far gone. As it is, we have only 20. Our percentage of Richmond residents that are African American is something like 26-27%. Like I said, compared with 44% in 1990. So you can see how, you know, people get pushed out, and we want to change that. So, in the past, we have tried to put forward a rent control and just cause for eviction ordinance, and we haven't had the votes on the city council. But now that we have three RPA elected officials, and there's another elected official who, you know, sometimes votes with us on these progressive causes, we decided that it was time, given these skyrocketing rents, that we needed to address this important issue. Another stat, just to let you know, is that rents have been going up higher at the rate of 10 times faster than the cost of living and wages. I know you brought up that point, Jack, earlier. So this is the situation we're facing. People can't afford to feed their kids, can't afford to, you know, buy school supplies and afford gas or whatever. When they have to pay these outrageous rents, and often they are ending up homeless on the streets, living in their cars. So we found that what we had to do earlier in 2015, people started coming to city council meeting and organizing themselves. Tenants who were receiving, a group of tenants, 20 of them, were receiving a 20% rent increase. This was from 1 month to the next. 20% up. So we decided we had to take action now. And so we got together a coalition. That's how you make change, you know, grassroots organizing. So what we did was bring together many people from some of the groups initially involved were Tenants Together, which is a tenants' rights organization, SEIU 1021, California Nurses Association, and, of course, the Richmond Progressive Alliance. Unions are very, very interested in rent control because their members are facing the same problems as other community members in terms of not being able to pay their rent. So what happened was we were able to pull this coalition together, and it, you know, we broadened it to include the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, Building Blocks for Kids, the interfaith organizations in our cities, Central Latino, disability organizations, Eviction Defense Center, housing organizations, neighborhood councils, like our Iron Triangle Neighborhood Council, which has 80% renters, nearly 50% of all of Richmond rents, homeless organizations, et cetera. So with that force and with elected officials that had a progressive mindset, we were able to pass rent control and just cause for eviction ordinance. And we were just so thrilled because this was the first rent control ordinance, the first new rent control ordinance in the nation in 30 years. So we had 4 votes out of 7, that's a majority, that's all it takes, to pass it in August of last year. What happened immediately after it was passed, because an ordinance doesn't go into effect, doesn't get implemented for another 30 days after it's passed, in those 30 days, the California Apartment Association spent upwards of, you know, $100,000 to thwart our efforts. And what they did was give fraudulent information to people that they, whose signatures they were seeking, and they told people that, you know, this would strengthen rent control when in reality it was to stop rent control. So they did get the qualifying number of signatures, and you know, it proved that a well-funded landlord campaign can stop, at least temporarily, the decision of a democratically elected city council, in this case a progressive, you know, a 4-person progressive group of council members. So we realized that, hey, okay, now we had to start over to think, how are we going to get this passed? So since then, what we have done is work to broaden our coalition even further and to come up with a new ordinance to put on the city council, to put on the November ballot. So that's what we've been doing in the last few months, and we've made a very, very good ordinance that includes some homeowner protections. Of course, it includes rent control. Rent can be raised up to 100% of the CPI, of the Consumer Price Index, which, you know, we think is reasonable, 2% or so a year. A rent board will be appointed. You know, there will be relocation payments if someone is unjustly evicted. You know, we also will make, if this is passed by the voters in November, the rent will roll back to it, what it was when we started this effort in July of 2015. So we think this is an excellent, excellent ordinance. We just filed with the city clerk's office, and we will start gathering signatures. In the next, I believe, mid-March, we're going to start our signature gathering process, which has to be completed by June. And once that's completed, we will continue with the campaign and continue to educate people so that come November, you know, we will have a yes vote for rent control and just cause for eviction. And we also think that that is going to happen, that we will win. We did. There was a poll done by SEIU, and what came about was from that poll was that 2/3 of the people polled do indeed support rent control. So we know we have to work hard because we know the California Apartment Association will be throwing lots of money to stop this, but we believe we'll get it done.
Can you explain a little bit what the California Apartment Association did to block your original ordinance? How was it that they succeeded in blocking it? That might be interesting for listeners,
right,
to anticipate what these opposition groups, these property opposition groups, you know, and folks should know that in a lot of places the apartment complex owners are not individuals, but they're financial organizations, hedge funds and so forth have been buying big blocks of apartments. So it's big banks, big finance people here that you're really fighting against. But what did they do here that forced you to go to another ordinance?
Right. Yeah, thank you. Yes, what they did, and you're right, they're often, you know, in addition to people, there are these hedge funds, et cetera. What they did, and it is an association not of small landlords, you know, it's mainly these big landlords that are funding this. They have the money. What they did was paid signature gatherers an enormous amount of money, you know, up to $20 a signature. So these were people that, you know, went around our community and told people to please sign this petition that will strengthen rent control. And people aren't, you know, don't have the time to read everything in the petition, and they often trust what they're being told. And they were the issue was being misrepresented by the signature gatherers. So they did get, in this 30-day period that they had, they did get enough signatures that were from registered voters to what we were faced with as a city council once the qualifying number of signatures was validated was that we either had to repeal the ordinance or we could put it on the ballot. We chose to repeal it and come up with a new ordinance because we wanted to make sure the ordinance was really solid that we put before the voters, because when you put something before the voters, once it's passed, you can't tweak it or anything. Whereas if we had done it as a city council, we knew that we could make some tweaks along the way. But this time we decided once we knew we had to put it before the voters if we wanted to actually have this policy, we wanted to put forward a new ordinance. So that's what we chose to do. We repealed the old one, and we started to work as a coalition on a new ordinance, and that's where we are today. And we're okay. Just getting our feet wet.
So this apartment association got this petition, correct me if I'm wrong, and went to court and suspended your ordinance. Is that what happened?
No, what they did is there is a it was a referendum. Once an ordinance is passed by a city council, there is a 30-day window where it could, you know, be overturned by referendum. And
okay.
So the California Association, Apartment Association, set about signature gathering. They went through the process, went to the city clerk, got, you know, the right to circulate these petitions. And they had to get 4,200 signatures, and they did it by paying people really high per signature, high amounts of money, so that people were really, you know, there was an incentive for them to really, you know, misrepresent the truth, which they, you know, they were trained by the California Apartment Association. So when they went around to people, they didn't have enough true information to present to people, and they were trying to get their $20 a signature, so they presented information that was not true. And we have videos and you know, lots of testimony that this is in fact the case. And in fact, once they get the number of signatures, it's validated at the county level, and the county said that 20% of the signatures were invalidated. So we know that they didn't do this in a fair and democratic way, but nevertheless they got the qualifying signatures, and then the city council was faced with having to do what we did.
That 30-day referendum window, is that a regulation of the city of Richmond, or is that a California state? In other words, can other people elsewhere anticipate the same thing happening, because it's the same California Apartment Association? They're going to use the same tactic. Is that a statewide 30-day window to challenge an ordinance, or is that just in Richmond?
That is a statewide policy. It may even be, you know, a national policy. I'm not certain about that, but I believe it's not just limited to Richmond. So I'm pretty sure it's a state policy for California.
Okay.
And yes,
okay. So
it's something
Maria,
we all face. Yeah.
Maria, you can anticipate your ordinances, perhaps, if they're too challenging, the California Apartment Association will pull the same thing down there. It's interesting to know what their strategies and tactics are. Gail, where can people go? I mean, you've got another election and petition ordinance coming up for approval. Where can people go to find out more about it and maybe join in with your efforts? Mm-hmm. Is there a website or meetings
coming
up? Well,
because we're just in the initial phases of getting this signature gathering process that we're doing going forward, where we don't have our website up yet, but it will be coming soon. But let me give my email address, which is Gayle, G-A-Y-L-E, at definingourdestiny.net. And if people email me, I could put them on my newsletter. I could send their email to the Richmond Progressive Alliance newsletter and keep them updated. They could also go to the Richmond Progressive Alliance website to get information, which is richmondprogressivealliance.net.
Okay, richmondprogressivealliance.net, and also Gail at definingourdestiny.net. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other folks in the Bay Area who may be listening to this, you know, in San Francisco and other places, Oakland, where similar issues are, you know, it looks like the point of the battle here is in Richmond right now, and you're probably going to learn a lot by joining in the effort there and helping Richmond and take back your experiences and your knowledge of how to deal with these apartment owners in these kind of city fights. Back to your own locality. You know, again, we need to cross fertilize the activities and the local efforts and get people communicating with each other in these various efforts throughout the Bay Area. You can learn a lot by what's going on in Leading Edge here in Richmond, and I certainly encourage people to contact Gail here and see what you can do. Jump in and help out and learn and bring back
your knowledge
to your own city.
We definitely want to get as many people to help us as possible. I mean, we certainly have our own residents that will be eager to go door to door and let people know about this effort, but we welcome others too who understand the importance of our struggle. But it is not just Richmond's struggle. Other cities, Alameda, Lafayette was looking at the rent control issue, and of course Mountain View, we heard from Maria's their struggle there, and you know, so many people are being faced with this. So we do welcome support for Richmond, but we know it's a much broader struggle.
Does your ordinance proposal cover all rents, or do you maybe exempt single family, you know, one or two rent duplexes, you know, that individuals might have, and focus on the big hedge fund apartment owners?
The situation is that we can't. There is a California law, the Costa-Hawkins Act, which only allows rent control to impact buildings, units, rental units that were built before 1995. So unfortunately, we cannot have a regulation in terms of rent control on buildings built after 1995. But we do have the just cause for eviction portion of the ordinance that will cover everyone. And so single-family units are exempted. Single-family homes, single-family houses are exempted due to Costa-Hawkins state law. Also, condominiums are exempted due to state law. So as well as everything built after 1995. So there, this will impact, the rent control portion will impact around 10,000 rental units in the city of Richmond. And if you figure, you know, two or three people on average, I mean, many will have larger families, but, you know, even if we conservatively say, you know, three people per unit, that would be 30,000 people who we can protect with, you know, rent increases that are reasonable, not skyrocketing. And the other thing we have exempted is, you know, if someone, if their primary residence, if they live in, you know, a single-family house and that's their primary residence and they have to rent it out temporarily, maybe they have a sick parent or they're taking a vacation, an extended vacation, they can rent it out without having to pay relocation fees after, you know, they come back and re-habitat the home. So that's something that we considered and put into the ordinance. And also in-law units and, you know, anything that is a secondary unit attached to the primary home is exempt from these policies. So we understand that. But the 10,000 people that will be protected both with rent control and just cause, and just cause for eviction doesn't mean that people who don't pay their rent can't still get evicted, or people who are causing major problems, you know, nuisance, property damage, those are just cause evictions. But it's the unjust evictions that we're protecting people. So we're glad to protect those 10,000 units, but we're also glad to protect the larger rental population in terms of just cause for eviction.
Well, I think that's important for the listeners to understand. When we say rent control, we don't mean all rents. We mean reasonable rent increases, right? Rent stabilization is probably a better word than rent control here.
Mm-hmm.
Just cause is, you know, only reasonable democratic demands that people shouldn't arbitrarily, you know, exploit and harm other people. There should be rules. That's all, you know, reasonable rules here.
You're absolutely right, Jack. That's what we're saying. You know, we can't let the market just define that people can raise up their rents, you know, astronomically and impact people's lives and futures. So yeah, we just think it's a reasonable regulation.
Yeah, I don't see any difference between, you know, what you're trying to do with rents here, reasonable increases and just cause, comparison with what's going on with the pharmaceutical industry. You know, I mean, they're ripping people off, increasing prescription drugs by 5,000%, hundreds of percent, people who need life surviving prescriptions, you know, and I mean, people have a right to get medicine, right, at a reasonable price. They've got the same thing as far as living. Homes, you know, housing, shelter. People have some rights here. It's not just totally, I mean, if we just let the California Apartment Association rip people off at 25% a year going on forever, it's no different than these big pharma companies taking drugs away from grandma and grandpa. It's the same thing. It's price gouging.
You're absolutely right. You know, these are just human rights. You know, I mean, we're supposed to be a society, or many of us, you know, are aspiring to be a society that truly cares about the members of society, and that means health care rights, that means housing rights, and we have a lot of injustices to turn around.
Well, it seems to me that we need to focus a little bit more on what's going on with housing injustices, not just medical injustices and all the other injustices, jobs, rights, and so forth. This whole housing thing is kind of not given the attention it deserves and needs in terms of human rights for shelter, reasonable rights for shelter and eviction, reasonable rights for not being arbitrarily evicted. That just, you know, that's in the same category as reasonable health care and reasonable education, etc. So I really commend you folks up there in Richmond. You're doing a wonderful job, and it's really a model for other community organizing. And folks, you should get in touch with Gail. That's Gail at findingourdestiny.net. Okay, the music and our show is over today. I'd like to thank you both, Gail and Maria, for coming on and telling folks what's going on.
Thank you for everything. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.